The Rams will trade their number two pick. Floyd Mayweather continues to run his mouth, and we will pick the second round of our baseball mock draft. The week's stories, big game picks, and more on this week's Up for Review. I think Green Bay is going to choke it up against KC.
I'd take that because that would mean that we're in the Super Bowl for the first time in a long time.
That defensive line of the 49ers just was relentless.
Barry Bonds-Sensi, what a joke.
Old Bud Selig loves Barry Bonds.
The bigger question is, why didn't you sign Cliff Lee 2 years ago?
I got to keep rolling with those Hoosiers.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Alex Smith finally decides that he wants to be a real NFL quarterback.
I would love to see that, especially in time for the playoff.
I don't know who taught this guy to tackle, but
this was just nasty. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Up for Review, a fast-paced sports podcast dedicated to bringing you news, fantasy advice, and much more. I am your host, Rick Lewis, and I am joined this week by Michael Michalik. Mike, what's going on?
Going pretty well. Nothing too new this week.
All right, well, then what do you say that we get started?
Sounds good.
The biggest stories in sports are now under review. Mizzou is probably better than a lot of people think.
They showed guys driving on the lane and people just turning their heads and watching.
Riots will happen. There will be a second Hurricane Katrina.
The Nationals could surprise some people this year.
That's a scary team, and I'd love to see them take down the Heat.
I think they should just scrap it.
Do you really want to eat $30 million over the next 2 years, though, for someone that's not going to pitch for you?
Always hated that question.
If you can be a defensive coordinator with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, you can get a head coaching job in 2 years.
Is it wrong that it just does my heart good to watch the Knicks lose?
It's not a professional team. It's amateurs.
They can show some chinks in the armor. And
whatever is in his Kool-Aid, I want a little bit of it.
I hope he doesn't hang him up.
It's the Weekly Blitz on Up for Review. All right, our first story in the Blitz is that the Rams are going to trade their number two pick. Rams new coach Jeff Fisher seems to be content with Sam Bradford as his quarterback, and the number two pick could bring in a huge haul with teams fighting to get Robert Griffin III, quarterback from Baylor. It's assumed that this pick could get at least two first-rounders, plus a mid-round pick, or maybe two. So the question becomes, Mike, what would you pay for RG3?
You know, it depends on what your team is and what your needs are. If you're one of those teams that have been, you know, historically pretty good, the Vikings come to mind right away. But, you know, you have that franchise, you have that money, you have that marketability, you have the market, and right now, down on the luck, but you have some big pieces. Adrian Peterson comes to mind. I would be willing to move up there to try to get RG the third.
So you're going to give up on Christian Ponder then, only a year into that?
I didn't think it was, you know, best pick right there. Maybe they're, you know, maybe Minnesota's more sold on Ponder than myself. Maybe you make Ponder part of the package.
Well,
you know, they already have Bradford, but I don't know. Quarterback always seems to be a revolving door.
Especially, you know, with Sam Bradford's injuries last year. I thought Christian Ponder did a pretty good job. You know, I wouldn't rule out the Vikings moving up there. There are rumors of, you know, hit teams that people wouldn't normally expect being in conversations with the Rams. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they jumped up there, found that athletic quarterback, that successor to Donovan McNabb. But at the same time, you know, I drafted a quarterback last year. I think I want to kind of stick with him. That said, you know, I have to question if this is the right decision for the Rams. Like I said, Sam Bradford, you know, talk about sophomore slumps. He was terrible last year when he was healthy, but he wasn't healthy very often, and he was even worse when he was playing hurt. You know, I'd have to seriously consider, if I'm the Rams, trading away Bradford and maybe taking RG3.
Here's I don't know, who's going to step up and say, I want Bradford with that huge contract and the guaranteed money and the way that he played? Would you rather want Bradford or would you want to get Robert Griffin III? Any team out there is going to try to go for RG3.
Oh, the Cleveland Browns, new offensive coordinator, I believe, Greg Schirmer, had experience with Bradford not last year, but the year before. So, you know, he might be interested because he knows what kind of skill set he's worked with him before. Plus, Cleveland's got two first-round picks. You know, maybe you'd trade just one of those for Bradford and then, you know, use the other one to bolster your offense some other way instead of having to package both those picks to move up to get RG3. I don't know. It's just an idea. Like, I don't know that I'm as sold on Bradford as the Rams seem to be.
I'm not sold on Bradford either, but no matter what you look at, the Rams have a few elite players and lots of holes everywhere else. Even if they decide to keep the number two pick with Robert Griffin III, is that going to do their team as much good as trading it and getting some of those other picks? Maybe at this point they're looking to just trade down, get a little bit more depth, and then hopefully build towards the upcoming years.
Yeah, I think the other thing you have to consider, too, is that if I'm the Rams, I want Cleveland to call because they have two first-round picks this year. You know, getting those future picks is all well and good if you're willing to be patient and lose for a couple more years. But I don't know that a St. Louis fan base that, you know, really has been disappointed over the last couple years by their football is willing to do that. I don't know.
Definitely a tough decision.
Yes, and we will come back to RG3 in a little bit. But first, spring training is now in full swing. Ha! Get my, it's very punny. I know, taking a note from ESPN's book and the headlines that they always do. You know, full swing. A couple different stories here that I want to talk about. Bobby Valentine last week slammed A-Rod, the Yankees, and Derek Jeter in his little talk, I guess, about Jason Varitek's retirement. You know, it came out a couple days later that Jeter and A-Rod, they really don't care what Valentine says. And so I must let the second guessing begin. Do you think that Bobby Valentine was a good hire for the Boston Red Sox, Mike?
I don't think it was. For whatever reason, every time I think of Bobby Valentine, the first image, the first memory of Bobby Valentine that pops into my mind and is when he was back coaching the Mets. He got tossed out of a game. He went into the locker room, got one of those fake glasses and mustache kits, put them on, and came back into the dugout thinking that no one would realize that he's back in the dugout. The umpires see him and toss him again, and he gets in all sorts of trouble. And this is the image that sticks out for me for Bobby Valentine. And if he is going to be your manager, and this is the person that you're going to put your faith in the organization in, how does he have anywhere to stand on to slam the New York Yankees? Like Jeter and A-Rod said, why the hell would you care what Bobby Valentine says?
Yeah, Bobby Valentine's a great personality. I don't know that he's as great a manager. He was really good on ESPN. You know, I really was kind of hoping that he would stay there because he was actually, you know, most former baseball guys get on ESPN as analysts or whatever, and they're just terrible. You know, you can't like the guy. There's no personality. It doesn't seem like they know what they're talking about, and even when they do, it seems condescending. You know, Bobby Valentine wasn't like that. You know, he was a guy that liked to talk. He was good at it. He was charismatic, and I liked that. I thought he was a really good fit for television. I don't know that he's a really good fit for, you know, Boston, especially with the attention that's going to be paid to him every single day in the media. Like, I hope that it goes well, but I can see it blowing up in their faces big time.
It might be good for a year or two. I don't think it is the best venture for him long term.
He's definitely the anti Terry Francona, though.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox definitely went in that direction. Maybe they wanted to distance themselves so much from that organization from last year. Complete overhaul, almost in every sense of the word. Maybe they went a little bit too far with hiring Valentine in that manner.
All right, so another big story from spring training. Yadier Molina, you know, he was supposed to be a free agent after this year. Albert Pujols left this year. And the St. Louis Cardinals, they sat down and they got a new contract hammered out with the person that could quite possibly be the most important person on their team at this point in time, just because of the importance that he has defensively. 5 years, $75 million. It's the third biggest contract for a catcher ever, between Joe Mauer's $184 million contract and Mike Piazza's $91 million contract. Mike, do you think this is a good contract for the Cards?
I think it's somewhere in between a good contract and a bad contract. If you compare it to the $184 million that Joe Mauer is getting, it seems like the best contract in the world right now. On the other hand, if you had that much money laying around, you got to wonder, why couldn't they assign Pujols? You know, Molina is not a bad sign. It depends on how Molina progresses this year. He's still pretty young. Maybe 2-3 years down the road, we'll be saying, hey, that was a great contract. Maybe 2-3 years down the road, we could be saying, that didn't turn out very well for him.
Yeah, I think that question kind of has to raise in the back of your mind, well, why didn't they get Pujols signed? But at the same time, like, it shows that they're not afraid to sign their players. They're not afraid to reward their players, especially Molina. You know, he gets all this talk about his defense, which actually, if you look at Bill James' handbook, last year his defense was kind of atrocious. But you also have to realize that he basically runs the entire pitching staff. You know, he was the extension of Dave Duncan. And after all these years of working with Dave Duncan, some of that knowledge is going to be retained. So in that sense, as like a pitching coach almost, he's going to be incredibly, incredibly important to the Cardinals from here on out, especially with a rookie manager. Like you said, I think it's somewhere between a good contract and a bad contract. I could definitely see it coming back to bite him in the ass eventually. But at the same time, all the money that they've saved by not having Pujols around, they've been able to sign Carlos Beltran, get Molina a big contract, get Berkman signed to a 2-year deal, stuff like that, which, you know, while it's small stuff and it's not going to add up to the huge numbers that Pujols puts up every single year, you know, maybe instead of having Pujols and a bunch of nobodies, they can get a core of group guys, you know, maybe a different personality in the clubhouse. I don't know. We'll see how it works out this year. I don't think they'll be as good as they were in the last 10 years, but I also think that they will definitely contend for the division. One thing that I do want to note here, I saw a joke on Twitter. You know, the contract was apparently signed on Leap Day yesterday, and the guy was like, well, you know, is this really a 5-year contract, or is it a 20-year contract? You know, and I laughed at that because I was like, man, 20-year $75 million really does seem a lot nicer than 5-year $75, but I don't know.
You better check MLB's union wording right there. Maybe Ryan Braun can help out Molina in this department.
Speaking of Ryan Braun, you know, all that went down last week, and we talked about that. But it's kind of recently come out. A lot of players have been interviewed by it, different reporters. Most of them don't want to go on the record as saying this just because of the implications of, you know, there's supposed to be some kind of code within sports and stuff like that. Whatever. Players do not like the outcome of the Ryan Braun appeal. It's a huge sentiment that's out there, which to me was kind of surprising. Do you think it's good that players feel this way?
It's definitely a sensitive issue. I understand players not wanting to say anything. If you're trying to build, you know, some clubhouse chemistry, you have to choose your words carefully. In this day and in this league, you never know when you're going to be traded and what team you're going to end up with. You know, all of a sudden, if you start saying Ryan Braun deserved to be suspended for 50 games and, you know, maybe halfway through the season you're on the Brewers, how is that going to affect your play? How is that going to affect, you know, your performance? How does that going to affect your job, you know? Mm-hmm. I understand why players are hesitant to say anything until, you know, baseball's been around for a long, long time. There's always been codes. There's always going to be traditions. And there's always going to be, you know, things that – unwritten rules that players are going to have to follow. I can understand why some of them are upset. You know, he got off on – you know, what is a technicality, but at the same time, that is what the union agreed to. But I do think some of the players that you know, maybe aren't taking steroids have to be wondering, gosh, you know, here's Ryan Braun. Here's the MVP. It sure sounds like to me that, in my opinion, he tested positive, but he got off on it anyways. Seems like there's not any real consequences, you know. MLB keeps trying to say, you know, cut the steroids. Don't be using performance-enhancing drugs, but it seems like everyone just gets off.
Yeah, I definitely understand the need for discretion, but at the same time, you know, I feel for those players that, you know, they are clean and they want the sport to be clean and they understand that they're role models for young adults and young children and, you know, they want to be held accountable and they want other players to be held accountable. I feel for those guys because, you know, like you said, this is just a loophole and overall I think it's good that players feel this way. I understand the need to not comment on the record for it because, like you said, you never know where you're going to be in a month or a year or whenever. So the question that all this brings up is, what does Major League Baseball do now?
You know, I know they're extremely unhappy with that decision. I don't know what more they can do at this point, you know. Based on the contracts they signed, based on the agreements with the union, it went through the process and went through the arbitrator, and the arbitrator said Ryan Braun does not get suspended. I don't think Major League Baseball has any other options right now to say, other than say, well, we screwed up. This is what's going to happen right now.
Yeah, I think the only thing that they can do is, like you said, admit they screwed up, and then clean up the language in their agreement so that, you know, a situation like this occurs again, that it's covered in the agreement. Apparently, it's already in the protocol for the company that they're using. So all they have to do is take that same language and put it in their agreement with the players' union, get it ratified. It doesn't sound like they'll have a problem doing that. And then we can put this all behind us, hopefully. And, I don't know, work to clean up the sport. Moving on, we've got the NFL Combine finishing up this week. There are some big winners and some big losers. A big winner, RG3 and the St. Louis Rams. I mean, there's no arguing that RG3 came away from the Combine looking like a fantastic pick. In most cases, you would think that he would be a number one pick, but with Andrew Luck there and the comparisons between him and Peyton Manning, you've got to think that the Colts are leaning towards Luck. Some losers. Second-tier wide receivers, Alshon Jeffries, Reuben Randall, and Kendall Wright really had terrible combines, and you know, they ran slow, sloppy footwork, things like that. But on the other hand, there were some second-tier wide receivers like Michael Floyd and Stephen Hill who probably shot up draft boards. These are only a couple of the big stories. Other players seem to stir up some interest, but I really have to ask the question because it was kind of a slow week and the combine was everywhere. What do we actually learn from the combine?
The most, right now, the combine has turned into almost, I wouldn't say a joke, but the most of the time, the big winners that come from the combine are the players with the best agents. You know, whatever they can do to market the player to the most effective ability, that's what their agents are doing right. You know, Robert Griffin III, he didn't throw. And, you know, he made a good case and a good argument of why he didn't want to throw. You know, he said, I haven't been working with his receivers at all. Why would I want to show up to the Combine and try to, you know, work on timing routes with players I don't know? So, you know, he focuses in on stuff that he can control. And all of a sudden he comes out of the Combine looking amazing because he can control his 40-yard dash. He can control his other athletic abilities. And he did not have to display maybe something, well, I wouldn't say it's a weakness, but at some point that might be the part of the game that RG the third might be his lowest point is maybe some of the timing. But he didn't have to do that. He came away over there just showing out all his strengths. So what has the combine turned into? It's it's just what agents can market their players the best, and how can they get their players to display their strengths and then hide their weaknesses the most.
Yeah, the best thing that I can compare it to, it's really basically the combine has become a beauty pageant for football players. I mean, that's
absolutely, yeah,
that's what it is. Like, let's go see how many times you can rep 225. Let's go see how fast you can run the 40-yard dash. And, oh, by the way, all you're going to be wearing is spandex the whole time so people can see how ripped you are. You know, like, it's a giant beauty pageant for football players, which is why I think that the most important part of the combine is probably the interviews. You know, getting those young men, those young adults up in front of coaches, GMs, news media, things like that, getting them on camera and, you know, having them be questioned. I think that's probably the best thing that you can see at the combine that you're not going to see in football film, because you're going to know if a guy is athletic by watching him on tape. I mean, you are. You may not know that he runs a 4.240, but in all reality, who cares? As long as he's got football speed, you know, you think people would have learned that lesson from Jerry Rice. Yeah, he didn't have the greatest 40 speed in the world, but he had separation speed on the football field, and, you know, if he got by you, say goodbye. So, I don't know how important those measurables are. I think the interviews are important. Overall, I think it's gotten blown way out of proportion, especially with, like, the NFL Network and ESPN being there all the time. It's just, there's too much. All right, time to move on to everybody's favorite segment of the week. Sometimes all you can do is wonder, what the f*** in the NFL's yearly farce?
I wish I could get paid $20 million to ruin the greatest sport in history.
They're not doing this for the benefit of people.
Sitting on the bench whining when he doesn't get the ball.
You know, to me, it seems obvious.
It's pathetic. You get paid that much, be that loved by an entire city, and just turn your back on them because you don't want to play there because you want a championship now.
I mean, it's bad in its own way, but this was just, like Roger said, this was embarrassing.
I'd love to talk to him just to see what the heck he was thinking.
Come on, people. Wake up.
This guy's a world-class athlete, and you're telling me he's eating that, you know, bucket of meat somewhere in the back streets of Spain?
He kind of got bit in the ass by that a couple years ago.
I don't know if he's got some magic trick or he kidnaps their children or what, but that guy seems to get the most out of anybody.
We're criticizing you because you're a moron, plain and simple. The WTF moment in sports. This week's weekly WTF moment in sports includes a familiar face if you listen to the beta podcasts. Floyd Mayweather is at it again, and he's continuing to run his mouth. At his presser for his fight against Miguel Cotto, Manny Pacquiao, of course, became the big topic. He's quoted as saying, "Nobody gets a 50-50 money split in a fight with me." I want to say that he offered like 30%. You know, the previous fight with Pacquiao was over a blood test for steroids, and now he's got this. So the question becomes, and he even tried to address this, but I don't think that he really can trustworthy right now. Do you think that Mayweather really wants to fight Pacquiao?
You know, I thought that Mayweather had a valid argument with Pacquiao when I first heard what he was talking about. It sounded like Pacquiao didn't want to take any blood tests. He didn't want to take any blood tests. And I thought Mayweather had a valid point of saying, well, how do I know, you know, you're not taking any steroids or any performance enhancing drugs? Then I was reading later on that Pacquiao agreed to take have a blood sample drawn from him right after the fight was finished. If Pacquiao is going to allow that, then I don't see any reason why Mayweather should have said, okay, you know, if Pacquiao is saying, I don't want blood drawn beforehand, but I'm willing to take it as soon as the fight is over, what difference does it make? It's going to be the same thing. And then opening up his mouth and saying, no one gets a 50-50 money split with me. Manny Pacquiao is the biggest name in boxing right now. Lots of people think he might be pound for pound one of the best fighters ever. No way that in any situation would anything at best, Mayweather would get a 50-50 split with Pacquiao. If anyone's going to make an argument, Pacquiao probably should deserve a 60-40 split with Mayweather. But if you're going to fight Pacquiao and if you want to fight Pacquiao, stop making excuses, take the 50-50 money split, and take up the challenge. This is the fight that everyone wants to see.
Yeah, I mean, Mayweather's 42-0, but when you haven't fought the other guy that's considered the best, I don't know how seriously you can take that undefeated record. You know, okay, you can beat Joe Schmo. Let's see you beat Manny Pacquiao. You know, I would even be willing to go somewhere to watch that fight. You know, I don't buy a lot of pay-per-views, and I don't really attend a lot of places that view those pay-per-views, but I would love to watch Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight. I just don't want to hear them talk anymore. And it doesn't seem like Mayweather really wants to do it. He's all these excuses, and you would think anyway, that his agent would realize that all this is making Floyd Mayweather look really, really bad. And maybe do something about it? I don't know.
If he's really interested in supporting the sport of boxing, this is what's going to have to happen. I'm not a huge boxing fan. You know, you just said you're not a huge boxing fan. But even the casual fans, or even the very, very casual fans, wants to see a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. That would boost the sport's popularity. That would need to be done in order to jumpstart the sport. Right now, they're falling behind. MMA is hugely popular. And at one point, that's going to overtake boxing unless they get the fights that need to happen.
Yeah, the reason that boxing is doing terrible is, A, you know, $60 for a pay-per-view fight is just ridiculous, especially when it's only one fight. And B, you know, MMA is doing really good at marketing themselves and getting those marquee matchups that everybody wants to see. If boxing can start to do that, I used to be interested in boxing. I watch Friday night fights every once in a while, especially if it was two guys that were pretty hyped up before the match. I would love to watch Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fight. I think it would be a terrific fight, a lot of good entertainment. I don't know. The other thing, and the reason that I put him in the WTF moment in sports this week, is because he also defended his tweet about Jeremy Lin, saying that the first sentence of his tweet was ignored. You know, but this is the sentence that I took issue with. This is the one where he calls attention to Lin's race. Yeah, the second sentence was, oh, well, you know, I'm just supporting other blacks or other African-Americans. Okay, well, that's fine. Nobody had a problem with that. Who cares if you're supporting, you know, people of your nationality, of your ethnicity, whatever. I don't care about that. The problem was that you were saying that the only reason that anybody's paying attention to him is because he's Asian. Now, is that part of it? Yeah, we talked about that. That was probably part of it, especially the marketing aspect. But it's plain to see, you know, and he even said that he doesn't regret what he said. It's plain to see that he doesn't understand. He doesn't get it, and yet he continues to talk, and that's why I just want to tell the guy to shut up. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just the only person listening to Floyd Mayweather still. But he really just needs to close his mouth, in my opinion. All right, that wraps up our weekly WTF moment in sports. And now let's move on to the fantasy preview. It's time for this week's Fantasy Report.
Prince Fielder,
a Marcus Colston,
Jose Bautista,
Adrian Gonzalez,
Deshaun Jackson, Bartolo Colon,
Miguel Cabrera,
Vincent Jackson,
Evan Longoria,
Cody Ross,
Troy Tulowitzki,
Peyton Manning,
Adrian Beltre,
Dustin Pedroia,
Hanley Ramirez,
Drew Brees,
Pablo Sandoval,
Jose Reyes,
Ray Wright,
Alex Rodriguez,
Chase Utley, Matt Forte,
Alexei Ramirez,
Ramos Ramirez,
Ricky Weeks, Tim Lincecum,
Derek Jeter,
Brett Lauria,
Brandon Phillips, Carlos Pena,
Jimmy Rollins,
Dave Wright,
Robinson Cano, Jorge Posada,
Raphael Furcal.
Looking at the best, the worst, the most far-fetched leaps in fantasy sports. Fantasy Report. To kick off the approaching fantasy baseball season, we have been spending the last 10 weeks, 11 now, actually reviewing the top 5 players at each position. Today, we're going to take that work a step farther and bring you our on-the-spot second round mock draft. Last week, we went through, Mike, Steve, and I, and we picked the first round of a 10-team standard head-to-head league. This week, we've rotated the order, just like a regular snake draft would, and we will go through and mock our picks. So, Mike, you picked last week, and you picked Roy Halladay with your final pick of the first round. This week, with the first pick of the second round, who are you going to pick?
Filling in for Steve, who aforementioned picked the holiday pick. If I'm going to go with a number one pick, if I'm going to use my first round pick on pitching, I'm going to follow that up with a second round on pitching as well. If you're going to use your first round pick, use your second round pick on pitching as well. This will put you in a premier spot to dominate most pitching statistics. My number one pitcher is still on the board. That would be Justin Verlander. I have him slightly above Holiday, but having a rotation with Verlander and Holiday, that's going to put you in contention for four of the five top pitching stats right there.
All right, so moving on to the second pick. Last week, the team that I'm picking for picked Ryan Braun with the number 9 pick, which I believe that was my pick as well. So I've got a big-name outfielder. I think I really want to then turn my attention to a position that's not nearly as deep, and there are still a lot of really good hitters left on the board. One I could go is Hanley Ramirez, who could play shortstop and third base, but I think I'm going to reach a little bit more to a weaker position, and I'm going to pick Mike Napoli here. I think Mike Napoli is head and shoulders above the other catchers. If I can get him, and if I can get him with a decent pick, I'm probably going to take him. I'm going to reach for him a little bit because I think he's that good. And I think catcher is right up there with shortstop and second base in its weakness after, like, the first 5-6 guys. So that moves on to the 3 pick. Robinson Cano was the pick last week. Who are you going to fill in this week, Mike?
With Cano already taking that second base position, I'd be thrilled to see Hanley Ramirez still available at this pick. Picking Cano and Hanley Ramirez gets you two premier positions with two very capable offensive stars. You're going to be in a great shape for having a great offensive team with second base and shortstop already filled up right there.
All right, so that moves to the number 4 pick. They took Prince Fielder, who will be a first baseman. This week, right now, I will take Curtis Granderson, fill in another really good bat into an outfield slot, and then we move on to the 5th round pick, who last week was Troy Tulowitzki. Who's it going to be this week?
With Tulowitzki, you already, you know, great shape for a shortstop. You already have that in position. Some of the other people I'd be looking at would be maybe Dustin Pedroia would be a good pick, but with Joey Votto still on the board, I think you have to pick him. No matter what the position is, I think Votto has to go right now.
All right, so the number 6 pick last week was Jacoby Ellsbury. So we've got an outfielder. Well, I'm going to make that outfield core a little bit better, and I'm going to pick Josh Hamilton here, former MVP. Yeah, he's going through some stuff right now, but I think he'll get through it, and I think he'll have a big season for the Rangers. So number 7, Jose Bautista was the pick here last week. Who are you going to add with Bautista?
With Jose Bautista, it gives you lots of home run power right there. Maybe the only dock for Bautista is, can he keep his average up? With that in mind, I'll be looking at some of the elite players still left over. Thrilled to see Adrian Gonzalez still on the board. I would probably go with him and his very high average to help continue with that trend.
All right, so number 8 last week, Miguel Cabrera was the number 3 pick. So Cabrera is going to have first, third eligibility, first at the beginning of the season, third after 10 games. So I think I'm going to probably, I don't know, there's a lot of good names on the board. Last year he didn't have a terrific season, but I think I'm going to pair him with Evan Longoria, which is going to give me really good power at the corners. You know, I think you could go other directions here. I think you could go Jose Reyes. I think you could go Buster Posey, who was hurt, but I think Posey's going to have a big year. You could go Pedroia, but I think I'm going to go power with power here and add my average probably in the outfield, and I'm going to go Longoria. So the number 9 pick this week goes to the number 2 pick last week, who took Matt Kemp, you know, potential 30-30-40-40 guy. Who are you going to pair him with, Mike?
I think Kemp is a great pick right there. I have him number 1. No doubt on my board. like you said, he is a five-tool stud. He will get you everything that you need. Runs, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, and average. To add to that, another player that is fully capable, a little bit of a risk, but you can afford to take that little bit of risk since you have Kemp at that number one spot, is Carlos Gonzalez. You know, hurt a little bit last year, but still fully capable. Puts a little bit of a strain on your team since you did 1-2 outfield. Definitely makes you sort of start looking at that middle infield next round, but I think that's the pick you're going to go with.
All right, and to round out the second round of the draft, you know, Albert Pujols was the number one pick last week for Steve. I'm going to pair him with a little bit of speed in middle infield, which is weak, and Jose Reyes. Yeah, I know he's got a big contract, and he might not pan out. He may be the next Sean Figgins. But I'm going to be pretty willing to take that risk here at the end of the second round. You know, I think he's potential first-round talent, depending on, you know, if he repeats what he did last year and if he can stay healthy. I'm going to be thrilled to take him with the 20th pick overall. And so that will conclude our second-round pick. Now, as promised last week, I want to go over a couple sleepers. So I've got three, and then I'll let Mike give his three, and then we'll move on. So my first sleeper, David Freese, third baseman for St. Louis Cardinals. The numbers really don't tell you everything about this guy because he spent a ton of time on the DL. But when he's healthy, the 2011 World Series MVP has been a monster at the plate. And he's got all kinds of compliments from Cardinals players and hitting coach Mark McGwire. Everybody thinks that this kid could really explode and be really good if he can stay healthy and go over the course of the season. So I personally am going to look for Freeze to stay healthy in the Cards' first post-Pujols season and put up some hopefully really good numbers as the Cardinals try to prove that they weren't all about Albert. My number two sleeper, Starlin Castro. Now, I will admit right off the bat here, Castro plays for a terrible, terrible team. He plays for the Cubs. But he put up better offensive numbers than a big-name AL shortstop that is likely to go ahead of him. Actually, he's likely to go quite a bit ahead of him if you go on just name recognition, which, let's be honest, that happens in leagues. That shortstop in the AL, Derek Jeter. Last year, Castro was a 10-20 guy, but he's also really young. So given a little bit more seasoning, I think that he could put up in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 home runs and maybe even 25 to 30 stolen bases. You know, he could be a 20-20 guy fairly easy, but he's hugely underrated, in my opinion, only because he plays for the Cubs. Number three sleeper, you know, and I don't know how much of a sleeper this really is, Justin Upton, who is quite possibly the best outfielder in the best outfield in baseball. The D-backs are loaded with talent, and, you know, last year Upton had a really successful season. He hit 31 home runs, stole 21 bases. The talent and opportunity are definitely there for Upton to become a member of the 30-30 club, if not more, this year. You know, he could have the next Matt Kemp breakout season this year. We'll see. So, Mike, who do you got for your three sleepers?
My first player, not really a sleeper. You know, most people heard of him at this point. Eric Hosmer is up-and-coming first baseman for a very, very potent and up-and-coming offense in Kansas City. I mentioned in last weekend in the draft guide that first base is such a deep position that it's one of those places where you can let some players slide and fall a little bit and still be able to pick up Eric Hosmer in the mid rounds and still be very happy with him. So not a huge sleeper, but definitely someone I'm willing to look at in later rounds. Another person that I have been targeting the last few years is pitcher Brandon Morrow. Every single year, I think he is going to break out and put up huge numbers. He has all the tools. He has wicked stuff. He can strike out anyone in the league. He just needs to put the entire package together in order to get this to work. He is a player that I'll be looking for. Has a possibility of winning the Cy Young if he ever gets all his tools together. And finally, my third player, my third sleeper, is definitely a true sleeper. He's projected to start left field for Cincinnati, and this is Chris Haseley. Only played for about half a season last year. Got in a lot of games. Got into 120 games, but only had 300 at-bats. It's about half a season. In that half a season, he was able to put up 18 home runs, 50 RBIs, and 6 stolen bases. Double it to get to about a full year. That's 36 home runs, 100 RBIs, and 12 stolen bases, and a 250 average. Definitely someone worth taking a flyer out in the late rounds.
All right, so next week we're going to cruise through the third and fourth rounds of our mock draft, since they should go a little bit faster. And then we're also going to give you some names that you might want to let slide down your draft board. And if you want to see our full top 10 rankings, player breakdowns, and draft strategies, head over to phoenixtv.net/upforreview, and you can download the PDF guide right now. All right, on to over-under. You win some? I don't think either of these teams deserves to be in the top 10.
I'm going to go with the upset this time.
If I had to choose, gun to my head...
You already know the answer to this.
You lose some. Welcome to the Harbaugh Bowl.
That's pretty crushing, I would think.
Can I put a disclaimer on my pick?
I knew they were going to lose.
Not a fan, is to put it mildly.
And it's always better to be lucky than good.
To be honest, I can give a damn about either one of those teams.
Really, I don't think we've learned anything from last week when we had 4 sweeps, but I'm going to sweep it again.
You know, my intellect says the Giants are on this roll, but...
I was running around screaming and hollering.
They didn't get blown out, but a loss is a loss.
Picking winners for the week's best matchups. It's over-under on Up for Review. Last week went fairly well. Steve got lucky. I'm calling it right now. He got lucky. He's 5-1. He's above Mike and I, who are tied at 4-2. I gotta say that with, number one, Indiana came out of nowhere to just blow the pants off of Michigan State. Indiana's played really good ball, but I did not see that coming. Nobody did. We swept against Indiana, and we all lost for it. Thing that got me was that stupid Missouri-Kansas game. Blow a 20-point lead, have the lead with like 10 seconds left, and then dribble around in circles when Kansas makes a bucket. I don't know. Anyway, again, I've picked 3 men's basketball games, 3 NHL games. Steve will make his picks sometime during the week, and then we'll throw these in here as well. But for right now, me and Mike will pick the first game. 2 Eastern time on Saturday. Number 12, Georgetown visits number 7, Marquette. Mike, who you got?
Gosh, these are 2 teams I'm not very high on. I think they played well all season. I just don't think they have the talent to go very deep. With that being said, I do have to make a pick. I'll go with the home team in Marquette.
I have actually been a fairly big Georgetown supporter throughout the season, so I'm going to go with the away team here. I think Georgetown's got some good things going. There's always that one surprise team that kind of leaps out at you at the end of the season. I think Georgetown could be that team to make a deep run. Moving on to Saturday night, 7 Eastern time, we've got, in my mind, because I'm biased, the matchup of the week, number 6 North Carolina at number 3 Duke. I'll just cut away the doubt now. I'm a Duke guy. I think that at home, yes, they have had some struggles this year, but they do not need Austin Rivers to make a buzzer beater in this game. I think Duke wins the ACC regular title by sweeping North Carolina this year. Mike, who do you think is going to win?
Going back a few weeks in the beta podcast, we picked the same game. My strategy is going to be about the same. Each of these teams are very, very good. I think the advantage has to go with whoever's playing at home court. With that, I'm going to go with Duke.
All right, rounding out men's basketball this week, on Sunday at 4 Eastern time, we've got number 11 Ohio State at number 5 Michigan State. Who do you think is going to win this one?
Even though Michigan State just got spanked by Indiana coming up, I've been on the Michigan State bandwagon all year, and I will continue to support them.
And I'm going to go the complete opposite of that, not because Michigan State lost big time last week, but rather because I think Jared Sullinger is the best player in the country, and I think Ohio State, even though they've had some struggles this season, is going to be a team to watch in the tournament this year. I think Ohio State pulls off the minor upset in Michigan State and wins the game. So now moving on to the NHL, we've got in the East the number two team, the Boston Bruins, at the number one team in the East, the New York Rangers, Sunday at 12:30 Eastern time. So, Mike, hockey matchup for you of the top two teams. Who do you like?
This is going to be a great matchup. Definitely some of the best teams out there. You can't go wrong picking either of these. Can I go out there and I guess it's still going to be a shootout. I'm going to expect this to go into overtime. Boston, I think, if I have to pick something, maybe Boston overtime.
All right, and I'm going to go, you know, Mike's always talking about, you're always talking about the home field advantage, the home ice advantage, whatever you want to call it. I think I'm going to go with that here. When you got the number one, the number two team, some edge has to go to a team, and I think home ice, the home arena, gives you that advantage. The next game is at Sunday, 6 Eastern time. We've got the number 5 team in the East, Ottawa, at the number 3 team in the East, Florida. So who do you think is going to come away with a victory in this one?
I'm going to go for a little bit of an upset. I think Ottawa is going to pull out the win in this one.
Okay. And again, I'm going to go with the home ice advantage because, really, to be honest, I know next to nothing about hockey. So I'll take that home ice advantage anytime I can get it, and we'll move on to our final game of the week. We have the number 6 seed in the West, Chicago, at the number 2 seed in the West, St. Louis. I'm going to go ahead and pick this one first. I picked the Blues last week to win, and I was vindicated by that pick. I'm going to pick them to win again this week. Who do you got, Mike?
Maybe I'm just being stubborn. Maybe it's just my personality. I really thought Calgary was going to pull up the upset last week against St. Louis. I am looking for this upset to happen again. St. Louis cannot win all their games. I'm going to go with Chicago just on the pure basis of I was wrong last week. I can't be wrong 2 weeks in a row.
All right, a much more divisive over-under this year or this week. I like it. We're not picking the same teams, which means there's some good matchups in sports this week. All right, so if anybody wants to talk to us, Mike, how should they do that?
Something you want to talk about, something we should add, or something you just can't stand, look us up on Twitter at twitter.com/upforreview, or email us at review@phoenixtv.net, that's FENIXTV.net, and add your voice to the show.
All right, so that'll do it for this week's show, but be sure to tune in again next Friday when the week's biggest stories, games, and players come up for review. For Mike Mihalk, I am Rick Lewis. Mike, have a great week.
See you, Rick.